Well, this song that we just sung, it contains this idea that of God who knows everything that happens, that God beyond our imagining, the God who cares for us. And this idea that we have so much. Although sometimes I do think that I have too much stuff. I don't know if any of you, do some of you suspect that you may have too much stuff? All right, that's a common thing. You have too much stuff, that you have a drawer or two that's crammed with stuff that you haven't accessed all that often or needed all that often, or a box or two in the garage, or too many tools or whatever it is. We have too much stuff. I don't know if anybody has seen Marie Kondo, the Japanese lady, about the art of decluttering, of organising your life. It's on Netflix for those of you who have it. It's very interesting to watch. She talks about how we can kind of practically organise things and how we should pack them and so forth. But she talks about how we should get rid of the things that we don't want. And she says one of the ways to do that is to actually pile everything together that you have. So don't start with your wardrobe and start taking out things here and there that you may not need. Put all your clothes together on the bed and realise how much you have. And then choose the things you want to keep, which is kind of a different way of doing it. All right? So choose the things that you want to keep. And she said, everything that you choose to keep should bring you joy. All right, so everything you pick up, yeah, that brings me joy, I'll keep that. Don't keep things that don't bring you joy. I mean, some people have responded to this, and somebody said, she said, only keep the things that bring you joy, so I immediately got rid of all the vegetables in the house. but you understand what she meant, this idea that, you know, only keep the things that matter to you. It's kind of interesting. One of the things she did say was that you shouldn't have more than 30 books in your house, which might be a challenge for some of us. But we do have lots of things. We have lots of things. We have lots of stuff, right? We have lots of stuff. We're fortunate people. We have lots of things available to us, and we can acquire things easily, almost too easily sometimes. So we have lots of stuff. And Jesus says to us, don't worry about things. In fact, he says, don't worry about what you're going to eat. Don't worry about what you're going to wear. Don't worry, all right? God has got this. And yet we do. We do worry, don't we? I don't know if you're like me, but I worry often about things. Things that haven't happened, things that have happened. What is it that drives our worry? We might say that what really drives our worry is fear. It's fear underlies worry, fear of what might happen. So we fear for the future, or we fear because of past life experience. So we fear what might happen. So we do worry. And look, there might be some instances where worry is a good thing, what we're describing here. You know, I worry about my children. I'm sure lots of you worry about your children or your grandchildren or the people close to you, about your friends. In that sense, it's your concern for them. You want the best for them, and you can't see how life's going to work for them right now, and because we don't know the future. I kind of wanted my kids to worry about things more, to be honest, when they were growing up. I thought there's a few things in their life they should have been more concerned about. I was trying to raise their worry levels, quite frankly. You know, worry about that homework. Worry about that assignment. Worry about doing your jobs. However, underneath this worry, this kind of deep-seated anxiety that can affect our lives, the problem really is fear. That fear is the challenge that we face. And so greed is not primary, for instance, the accumulation of stuff, acquisition of stuff. It's not primary. It's a symptom of something deeper than that, a kind of fear that drives us. Some years ago now, I went to a workshop on grief and understanding grief. And the presenter, a doctor from Queensland University, talked about this idea that our most primary, we have two primary emotions, and the two most primary emotions are love and fear. Right at the heart of everything, of who we are, love and fear is what drives us. And she presented this poem by Loonig, you know, the cartoonist Michael Loonig. And he said, there are only two feelings, love and fear. There are only two languages, love and fear. There are only two activities, love and fear. There are only two motives, two procedures, two frameworks, two results, love and fear, love and fear. And I think there's some truth in that. In fact, Scripture would bear that out, where John says in his letters this idea, he says, perfect love drives out fear. When we might have assumed that the opposite to love was hate, but it's not. The opposite to love is fear, this primary emotion. And so it's fear that often drives our worry. But sometimes, of course, that's understandable. I mean, you could say to a farmer in Western New South Wales now, don't worry. But it would kind of be meaningless, wouldn't it? What kind of advice would that be when their livelihood is at stake, where they face insurmountable debts and they see no way out of it? How could you say to them, not worry? But it's interesting when we think about the people to whom Jesus was writing or speaking. Now, we know he said this to the disciples. That's what it says in the reading, that he says it to the disciples. But in fact, there's a crowd gathered around him at the same time. So he's alternately addressing the crowd and the disciples, and he speaks through the disciples to all of those who were gathered there. And these were common people. Now, just think about that. What was it like to be a peasant in the first century? It was to live a life on a knife edge, really. One accident or one problem with the breadwinner in the family, and the family could be destitute. There was no government safety net. There were no kind of organised social welfare. Most people had one, perhaps two changes of clothes. They lived in shared accommodation, often with their livestock. They ate the most basic of meals. So when Jesus says to them, don't worry about what you eat, don't worry about what you wear, he's talking to people for whom that was a challenge every day. Every day that was their challenge. Which is kind of an interesting question, really. I think for me it raises a question. Is it harder not to worry when you don't have much, or is it harder not to worry when you have a lot? Which is harder? If all you've got is one or two things, that's all you've got and you hold on tightly. Or when you've got lots of stuff, you hold on tightly. Which is it? The same is true of giving. You know, when we give generously, a friend of mine was always taught to tithe, and he followed that teaching his whole life. And as his salary increased, he continued to tithe, and it didn't matter how much his salary increased, he continued to tithe. And his salary was very, very big, and he continued to tithe. And I remember having this discussion with him and someone else. Is it harder to tithe when you make $500,000 a year or you make $50,000 a year? Which one is harder? Well, I think perhaps it's always the same, just the same as it is with our possessions, whether we have a lot or whether we have a little, which might tell us that there's something common underneath. One of the things that we can worry about, one of the reasons we want to acquire, is that we fear missing out. And that's a thing, right? It has its own acronym now, FOMO, it's called. Have you heard of that, FOMO? Those of you who are hip with your kids. All right, FOMO, fear of missing out. What will I miss? If I don't have this, what will I miss? If I don't have this experience, if I don't have this money, what will I miss? And in a way, that can be kind of normal. But in a way, it's unknowable when we do give, I think. Do you know the movie A Wonderful Life? Have you seen that movie? The movie with James Stewart? Okay. Famous old black and white movie. And I love this movie. And when I was a school teacher, I went on a Year 12 retreat, and they gave me the job of choosing the movie for the Year 12 students to watch. And so I thought, this has got such a beautiful message that, of course, these 17 and 18-year-old children will want to watch this beautiful black and white movie. So I started to play the movie, and then it came up in black and white, and the kids looked at me like, what do you mean black and white? And after about 5 minutes, it was almost a riot. And so I said to them, look, if you don't want to watch it, you can go. And they all left. In fact, I think three music students from my class, out of loyalty to me, actually stayed and watched it and tried to stay awake. But if you've seen the movie, you know it's about this idea of this generous man. It's played by James Stewart, right? So he's this generous man, and he's a good man, and he has all these dreams for his life, but it seems that his dreams never quite happen because there's always some reason he has to help someone else. He has to help his brother. He has to help someone else in his family. He arrives at this point in his life where he's got this debt and he just does not have the money to pay it. And he's just in despair. And he's in despair that he has missed out and all the opportunities and what has it gotten him. And so, you know, he contemplates taking his life. And an angel comes along and an angel shows him what his life would have been like if he had chosen another path. Now, most of us will not have an angel to show us what the alternative was if we didn't live generously and loving lives, if we didn't accumulate and hoard, if we would have in fact missed out. We don't know that. We don't know that. But Jesus is calling us to live a different way, to have the centre of our life not around the fear of missing out or thinking of the experiences we didn't have, but to believe that God is with us and we have all we need. I had an auntie and uncle who moved from Inverell up to Brisbane at around the same time that our family did. And they'd lived in Brisbane for 6 or 7 years and decided to sell their house and move somewhere else. And when they went to move, they discovered a number of tea chests that they'd never gotten around to unpacking. These were actual tea chests made out of wood, right? So they discovered these tea chests that were sealed up that they hadn't unpacked. And they thought, well, if we haven't needed them for 6 or 7 years, we don't need them now. So they just threw them out. Could you do that? Could you do that? We didn't need them, they said. So we got rid of them. There was no fear of missing out there. Now, when we talk about possessions, it is something that we have to think through, I think. And so we can't just, Jesus says, don't worry, all right, I won't worry for the rest of my life, because life doesn't quite work like that. And in fact, Luke gives us some different messages about things, about possessions and about money in his gospel. So in fact, the very next part of our chapter, Jesus says, be faithful with what you have. It's about stewardship. Now, if the message is be faithful with what you have, by implication, you have to have something. All right, you haven't sold everything and given it away. The story before has been about guarding against greed. And perhaps we see this in the call of the disciples. If we go back to Luke 5, the call of Levi, who was told to leave everything and follow Jesus, and he did. But then the very next verses, we're told that he put on a party, invited everybody to share in what he had. So by implication, he still has stuff. And there's an example in Luke chapter 8, at the beginning of the chapter, of some women who'd been healed by Jesus and had become followers of his. And they followed him and they supported his ministry out of their own means. So we have this idea in Luke, yes, there's this idea that we leave everything, but there's also this idea that we use what we have differently, which means that we actually have stuff. So perhaps at the heart of this is what Jesus says in Luke 16, the famous saying, that no servant can serve two masters. You cannot serve God and wealth, or God and stuff. No servant can serve two masters. And it gives us an idea that things in themselves are not the problem. And we'd know that, wouldn't we? That money is not the problem. That possessions are not the problem. It's how we respond to them, how we view them, what motivates us. In fact, we talk about this in leadership classes, that normally in life, in fact, usually, almost all the time, the problem is not the problem. Okay? What I mean by that is one person faces a particular tragedy and they rise above it and they respond magnificently. And another person faces exactly the same tragedy and they're overwhelmed by it. and incapacitated by it. Right? The problem is not the problem. It's how we respond. Something goes wrong in the workplace. Something goes wrong in your family. The problem's not the problem. The problem is how people choose to respond. One person responds in anger and there's devastation in the family. One person responds with wisdom and maturity, and the problem is dealt with. Okay, does that make sense? The problem often in our lives is not the problem. It's how we respond or react to it. I remember years ago when I got cancer, and when they gave me the diagnosis, and I got diagnosed in kind of an odd way. I left it very late, and so a family friend who was a physician interpreted the findings, and he said, yeah, basically you've got cancer. And whenever anybody tells you you've got cancer, right, I think you can legitimately worry. I'll give you permission, right, to worry. So I was very worried. And I said to Sharon, I've got cancer. And she said, we'll be fine. I said, Sharon, I've got cancer. And she was, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. And I thought, she's not taking this seriously enough. So we progressed through the treatment of 6 months and all the, you know, chemotherapy and all those kinds of things. And I remember when I told Sharon I'd been up to get the results of my PET scan, and they said, the cancer's gone. And I told Sharon, and she burst into tears. But there was this reminder that the problem is not the problem, all right? It's how we deal with it. How do we view it? This thing in our lives, these things in our lives, this money we have, these possessions we have, how do we view them? That's what we're talking about. What's our attitude towards them? What's our worldview? Because the way we choose to see things, the way we choose to see things, matters more than the stuff itself. It matters more than the problem itself. Our attitude to wealth is key. Jesus says, don't worry about it. What he means is, don't make it your main concern. It cannot be what drives you. It cannot be at the heart of your life. What Jesus is really calling us to is not asceticism, but rather simplicity. See, asceticism, to be an ascetic, is to renounce possessions. But simplicity is to set them in perspective and rejoice in God's goodness. And that is the heart of Jesus' message here. God is with you, he says. God provides. He always has. He always will. Trust him. Jesus calls us to live every day in the recognition of God's goodness and mercy. Your life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Who said that, do you know? It's a trick question. It was Jesus, right? He said it just before. Your life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. And we should believe Jesus. Your life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. So don't be fearful. Don't worry. Because when we're driven by fear, we fall into the trap of consumerism. That is, to buy things we do not need to impress people we do not like. And when that is tied to an unexamined cultural truth, it becomes more and more what we'd call an axiom, right? What seems to be a self-evident truth. That we deserve an ever-increasing standard of living. And when we do that, consumerism becomes corrosive and it becomes a culture we must challenge. But it's an insidious idea, this idea that we deserve an ever-rising standard of living, that we deserve more and more and better. It's hard to resist, I think. You know, the army's put because of the changeover with all kinds of stuff, they've put a moratorium on getting new phones, right? So I've got an iPhone that the army supplies for me, and it's quite old now. I mean, it's 4 or 5 years old. And I look at other people and their phones are bigger than mine and they're faster and they're better. And I think I deserve the next phone, don't I? I need the next model. Like, and we're kind of being trained in consumerism to want the next model. You know, it's the same with cars, wasn't it? Like there's a new model come out, so you have to get the new model because it's got better stuff. And we get caught up in this idea, this consumerism, this wanting things. And Jesus says, no, live another way. And sometimes we might protest, but the reality, the real thing that will make a difference is choosing daily to live it out. Jesus calls to live out our dependence on God, to remember it every day, to remember that life is always about more than possessions, that it's about people, it's about relationships, it's about community, it's about loving and being loved. Now, when I cook, I like to make my own gravy, by which I mean I don't use Gravox. I like to make the real thing, right? Make proper gravy. You know, when you've got some people over for dinner and you've cooked a baked dinner or whatever and you go to make your gravy, and sometimes it doesn't work out for me. Some of you might always get your gravy right, but sometimes I haven't waited for it to get hot enough before I put the flour in. Flour doesn't cook out properly. No matter how much you stir, you can't get rid of the lumps. Nobody's nodding their head looking at me. Maybe it's only me that's experienced this. All right? And you wait, oh, look, the gravy's lumpy. So when you put it on the table, you apologise. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry about the lumpy gravy. And you can kind of miss the real point. That here you are, sharing a meal with people in your life, sharing a meal with friends, sharing a meal with family. And it's okay to have great gravy. Sure, that's wonderful. But to have lumpy gravy in the company of loved ones is even better. Who can we invite to share our gravy? Now, you understand that this is a metaphor, right, that I'm explaining here, all right? Gravy is not the thing. But it's this idea that we worry about the stuff that doesn't really matter. We worry about the stuff that doesn't really matter. We worry so much about what people will think. We worry so much about what we might miss. Jesus says to us, stop. Look up. Look at your Heavenly Father. And then look around and see all that God has provided for you. It's what Paul was saying when he said, set your heart on things above, not on earthly things. And something changes in us when we do that. We set our heart on things above. That's what that video was talking about, this idea that we become a different person. It rewires our hearts, rewires our brains. And we're freed to share, we're freed to give, we're freed to love as we should. We're called to share, we're called to be generous people, we're called to be hospitable people. Our security is our Heavenly Father, a God of love who loves us. So let's give our Heavenly Father his rightful place. Let's simply be generous with all that he's given us. To give, no strings attached. One of the challenges in the first century world was this idea that when you, in fact, offered hospitality, for instance, that it was about payback, that you put an obligation on the other person. So if you invited them for a meal and gave them something that they now owed you, all right? There was a sense that hospitality was offered with obligation. Jesus says, don't worry about things. Don't worry about possessions. Don't worry about what you're owed. Just give generously. Live generously. Give, no strings attached. Give generously and freely out of love. Because that's really what we're talking about here. We're talking about the way of love versus the way of fear. Because sometimes life is a binary choice. It's either this way or that way. Jesus says, live as if it's all God's, and as if all of life is a miracle, and as if love matters most in the world. Don't live out of fear. Don't live a life of worry and anxiety. Don't live a life of greed. Don't live a life of accumulating stuff. You see, if greed is a symptom of fear, and I think it is, greed is a symptom of fear, then generosity is a symptom of love. Loving people give generously. It would be a strange thing indeed to say that we love someone, but to withhold from them, to hoard and not to share. When we love greatly, we'll give people all that they need, wouldn't we? In view of our loving Father's provision, let's live generous, grateful lives. Love is the answer. Love is the answer to the fear that drives greed. Love must matter most to us. We must say to ourselves every day, I love, therefore I must share. I must give. I must support. In view of our loving Father's provision, let's give, live generous, grateful lives. Our prayer is that God would overwhelm our fear with his love, so that by his grace we can live generous, grateful lives.